This episode is sponsored by Masterworks.io, where you're invited to join an exclusive community investing in blue chip art. Visit Masterworks.io, promo code DHU.
Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
And I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And it's the 16th of March already.
Yep. Is it the Ides? What are the Ides? When are the Ides?
The Ides are the 15th.
It's just yesterday. Just one day.
We're post-Ides.
Why isn't it just an Ide?
No, it's like, now you're confusing me.
See, that's where it is. That's what it is. It's a lot of English has just turned the corner of just unrecognizable. Too many questions. Well, markets have been ripping around. We talked about last week that we were back, and finally markets got a little bit of a reprieve on Monday, Tuesday. But, I mean, they really got a reprieve throughout the week, one of the best weeks in months and months and months. The small caps just rallied amazingly, and we saw that the kickback on the Dow hitting a new high, the S&P hitting a new high, the small caps hitting a new high, although the NASDAQ still lagging a bit. And one of the big things was that treasury rates were coming in a bit, helping to ease concerns of the markets over the last week. And thinking that, well, maybe this move that we have is not just going to be a one direction up. It's going to subside a bit. And maybe the panic over it hitting over 1.5 on the 10-year and then now 1.6 on the 10-year, it's not just going to go incrementally higher forever. Or maybe it will, but it will be at least a slow burn. So kind of interesting. We saw the $1.9 trillion approved last week of new monies being sent out to all sorts of places, bailing out states, bailing out school systems, bailing out businesses, restaurants, airlines, and the list goes on. And, of course, the exciting $1,400 that seemingly is going to be deposited directly into brokerage accounts. I don't know why they're even sending
That's what everyone's saying. Well, I was listening to a report today. And they said it's going into two things, stocks and Bitcoin.
Right. But I think, you know, it's funny because I think that there's something about that in that we know that happened the first time, a bit of it, the second time, a lot more. And you have to wonder if, you know, if everybody knows about it, maybe it's not going to happen. If that's the thesis. I don't know.
I don't know what the thesis is.
But they are talking about, I mean, every survey that you saw was, well, people pay off a little bit of their, you know, loans outstanding. They'll put a little bit aside for bills and the rest.
You mean do take a responsibility for your future and actually use the money to pay bills.
Right. Well,
no.
Well, I guess they're thinking they can always pay their bills. They can always get the opportunity to buy at these bargain basement prices for stocks and Bitcoin.
Bargain basement historically high prices.
But we have that going on. We had a big NFT auction last week, what to talk about. And phrases that make the hair on the back of my neck stand out and quiver. Mm. So we got some things that are happening in the markets there. Bitcoin ramped over the weekend, hit about 62,000. And then dropped back to about 54. Something happened where there was an announcement, which we'll talk about with regard to India, actually over the weekend. They kind of splashed some cold water on it.
Yes, yes.
SPACs are seeing some interest again, especially in the EV space. I mean, I'm talking about 30% drops the week before and like 30% rallies last week. Enormous opportunities in many of these. And the big thing right now that we have to watch, just to give everybody a preview, everybody's holding their breath until tomorrow, Wednesday, the 17th, St. Paddy's Day, for the FOMC rate decision meeting and press conference. Starting at 2 o'clock, we'll get the rate. They'll be flashed on the screen, and we'll have all the guys from CNBC and Bloomberg and Fox Business talking about, oh, that's the rate. Well, we didn't expect it to be any different, but there's one sentence different in the statement that we have to really pay attention to here, and it's blah, blah, blah. So they'll parse this, pull it apart, try to put it back together. Big thing is 2:30. At 2:30, we have Jay Powell in his press conference trying to maneuver the commentary on how we have inflation, but it's transitory probably, and how they're going to keep rates low for an extended period of time, and how even though they're buying bonds, it's not inflationary, which is kind of funny because isn't that the whole purpose?
I don't know.
Well, I'll tell you.
I don't know what they're... these guys have got me baffled.
Well, it's funny because actually Steve Leisman at the lunchtime hour today, I was eating a little bit of Singapore noodles at lunch today, and Steve Leisman was asked about his thoughts on the Fed. And he said, you know, I really don't know anymore. I have no idea what they're actually talking about anymore, which is kind of interesting for Steve Leisman, who is the head, the senior or the economics guy for CNBC. You know, he's got all the answers and he doesn't know. So I guess maybe the Fed doesn't know.
I'm surprised he didn't finish the sentence off. He says, but I think it's a buying opportunity.
Well,
that'd be CNBC's mantra.
Right. So every comment and every word's going to be parsed. Because don't forget, here's the thing. The Fed has been doing what they can in an attempt to meet two specific goals. One is full employment, which Janet Yellen now says we'll have by the end of 2022. We're back to full employment. And price stability in the form of keeping inflation rolling, so we have the velocity of money and all the things that happen there. The main goal of quantitative easing and debasement of currencies and low interest rates is to stoke inflation or to keep deflation at bay. And it's going to be really interesting to have him talk about how, well, we have some, but it's not that much, and we don't think what we're doing is going to cause incredible amounts of inflation. But if that's... Which that goes contrary to exactly what they're trying to do.
Well, the possibility exists because every time we have a downturn of any real consequence, and we've had a continuing one since 2000, the way I see it. But it is the last time they had this stagflation, which was interesting. It was like there was nothing happening, but it was just inflating for no good reason. How about the idea that you have a deflation, inflation going on at the same time? What do you do?
That is now grounds to elect you to the Federal Reserve Board. That is so outlandish and so confusing that it is guaranteed entry for a seat on the Fed Chairman Board. I mean, how does that work? What does that exactly mean? Deflation, inflation at the same time. In certain areas, like part of the economy and part of the price are going down, but yet other things are going up?
And they have to be pretty close to each other. Well, I think it's possible that you can conceive the idea because the tech sector has always been in a deflationary mode, which people don't want to realize. But, you know, the price of a product stays the same, but its power goes up, or the price goes down and the power goes up.
That's classic Moore's law, right?
Yeah, because of Moore's law. And so in tech, deflation has been just the way everybody operates, and they don't think twice about it. Yeah, they've got to move product, get it out of here because it's going to be worth less shortly thereafter. And people have to wait to make a decision. Should I buy later when I get more for my money? Which is a deflationary attitude, which is the real problem with deflation. People stop buying. And meanwhile, you have inflation on commodities and things like that. Perhaps it's been shown that it can work, that you can have a deflationary segment, which tech is, within a broader economy and have inflation all around it. I don't know. These sorts of crazy things happen, and they don't get resolved right away. Nobody knows what to do about them.
Yeah, and that's what's happening with regard to – I mean, we're seeing that in the area of commodity prices are inflating. Asset prices are inflated. Residential real estate is inflating. Commercial real estate is not.
Yeah. Gasoline.
Yep. So it is – kind of interesting to watch what will happen here.
If you find more sectors that are deflating at the same time, that's when it would get interesting because I don't know what they would – I don't know if the Fed could do anything about it because you can't raise rates, you can't lower – they're just they'd be screwed. I mean, they'd be trying to explain it away for the next 4 years.
Well, the problem is with the Fed and this whole idea of, you know, if one sector is doing well and one sector is not, or there's inflation in one and not the other, the problem you have is that their instruments that they use are so blunt. They're not targeting anything more than this giant, you know, pile of money.
One thing. They target one thing.
Yeah. And they hope that dissolves everything. That's like kind of going into a hospital for a broken foot and then taking out your appendix because they think that's going to solve everything.
Well, you're already in there.
Yeah. Might as well. You don't need it. Yeah. Let's see what else we have here. Retail sales plummeted in February, but January was revised up to 7% gain month over month. Versus the 5%. So some of the takedown for February could be attributed to January's revision up, but still we did see a slowdown in a lot of different areas in February. So Twitter aggravation. You're not on Twitter much anymore, are you? You kind of cooled it?
No, I use it mostly to announce that we just did this show or no agenda or I wrote an essay or something. I really don't interact much on it. Once in a while I do, but not to any extreme.
If you remember,
I definitely don't get into fights.
Right. If you remember, for a long time I was saying, I don't see a lot of advertising in my stream. I just don't. Well, those days are over.
Oh yeah. No, there's tons of advertising.
I think
it's pretty well done.
Lately it's been, I feel that they have really doubled and tripled up. Like every third tweet is an advertisement.
There's too much advertising. I agree with that because they're trying to make money. But it's not horrible, like a bunch of, say, banner ads all over this page.
Right.
It just kind of comes and goes, and it scrolls off.
That are flashing. Yeah.
But animated GIFs.
The other thing that's been really becoming a big problem, and it's not only for me, although I had another impersonator today seemingly come on board.
Yeah, I heard this. You have somebody trying to scam again, using your name.
Yeah, and they block. The first thing the scammer does is they come up with a name. This time it's Andrew Horowitz without the Z on the end. Last time it was Andrew Horowitz instead of the Z, it was an A on the end. Or Z with the A on the end. Anyway, what they do is the first thing they do is block me so I don't even know they're out there.
Ah, good move.
The second thing they do is they start, I don't know how, maybe going on my stream and asking people that maybe or looking at who follows me and then.
They use your picture?
Yeah, it looks exactly the same. Oh, and my whole feed, my entire feed is copied up to the minute.
Huh.
And then what they do is they start following my followers. And then what they do is they go to the follower and DM them, direct message them, and say, hey, just want to let you know I got a great opportunity and I'm. And everybody's like always, oh, I can't believe you just DM me. I mean, you know, wow, I'm so glad you're following me. And, you know, I'm really so happy about it. I'm thinking, oh, this is going to be bad. I could see because people have sent me the screenshots of their conversation. And then what they do is they start talking about, well, I have this really great deal and why don't you send me this money for this Bitcoin deal? Anybody that knows me knows I'm not going to pump. Well, I'm not going to pump anything, but I'm not going to pump a Bitcoin deal on Twitter.
That's for sure.
Okay. That's not happening. So anybody that is out there, please, if you find that you have the potential, look at the name. If you have the potential to be following somebody that is not the real person that you may or may not know, I am never going to reach out for you and try to pitch you any kind of investing idea through a direct message. It's just not happening. Report them as an impersonator. I'm not the only one. I've seen this all over Twitter. People saying, hey, there's somebody impersonating me.
Huh.
So very bad. So you send your information to Twitter. So Twitter is kind of crappy. All right. So
somebody impersonated me once, like some time back.
I hope nobody's getting scammed though. That really concerns me. That somebody's getting scammed through me.
What's concerning is that Twitter, it makes a big stink about finding some poor conservative woman who says she doesn't want to get a vaccination and they roused her at the drop of a hat.
Yeah.
Yet this goes on and it just goes on and on.
I don't know why they don't have a team dedicated to authentication with a check mark. I mean, it's pretty easy to do that. You know, it takes some time. You have some people send in the picture of their driver's license, maybe some other identification information. match it up, and then put a check mark, and you know that you only follow people with check marks. I don't know how hard this is. But they stopped that because they didn't want that. Because you know why? They want all the users. They want the fictitious number of bots and users on there.
Yeah, because it racks up their numbers.
Of course, it racks up their numbers and it sells it right to the advertisers.
Yeah, that's exactly why they won't do it.
Right. Yeah, somebody in the chat room is asking is if the impersonator tried to sell some tweets for NFT. No, that was me. I said we would sell the first edition of the podcast on an NFT.
Yes.
But it wasn't a direct message.
Let's get that together and do that soon.
All right, Bitcoin. Bitcoin, we saw a Bitcoin ban this weekend, or a proposal. India is proposing a law banning cryptocurrencies, fining anyone trading in the country or even holding such digital assets. This is from a senior government official told Reuters. The bill, once it one of the world's strictest policies against cryptocurrencies, would criminalize possession, issuance, mining, trading, and transferring crypto assets. They have up to 6 months of time to get rid of your stash or move, I guess, after which penalties will be levied. Bitcoin went from 62 to 55. I think it was on that. Let me tell you something. Here's my thing on Bitcoin. This asset has more corrections than a high school English teacher.
Ugh.
Bad one?
How long did you work on that gag?
Yeah, it was 4 minutes. Just putting those words together.
Well, I have one that I've been sitting on.
Okay.
Bitcoin has more moves than Amelia Clark's eyebrows.
All right, you win. NFTs, we talked about
competition.
Well, it could be. We talked about NFTs last week, this non-fungible tokens.
Yes.
Fungible. Yes.
Fungible. Fungible is the key word here.
Fungible. Art auction for this Beeble digital print went for $69 million.
Yeah, I know. You know, here's what I'm thinking. I can't prove this one way or the other, and it's just a supposition, and I could be completely wrong. Do we know any of this is true? Do we know the guy who get paid the 60? Have we seen a check amount of money go from point A to point B? I mean, could it all be a promotion? And the $69 million is nonsense.
It's very possible because it is so absurd that it would, if it was sold for, I don't know, pick a number, $800,000.
Million dollars. I would go for a million.
Right. But $69 million, is there a 69? Is that a funny thing?
Yeah, maybe that's the joke. Yeah, they put the 69 in there so you can get that 69 gag.
Yeah, or supposedly the buyer was this Bitcoin whale out of, was it Taiwan or Asia somewhere? No, Singapore. Sure. Singapore.
Yeah.
But you don't know. And I think it was Elon Musk put up something that he's going to sell some, I don't know, some song or something through an NFT. And then Beeble says he'll pay him $69 million. They went back and forth. Yeah, it's kind of crazy.
So I'm so skeptical. But I mean, okay, you know, if you want to, you never know. I mean, it could be, it just looks like, just doesn't look right. I mean, I'll gladly put a couple of my exclusive award-winning JPEG photos up. I'll go to, there's a number of there's already some exchanges where you can go in there and drop them off, see what happens. I don't think $69 million is in the cards.
I don't think $69 is in the cards for some of these things. I mean, what's the difference of just doing this and selling it on eBay? And the difference is having the original piece itself. You know, the original, somehow a one-off, whether, I don't know, litho.
Well, you have a JPEG. It's like going to be a JPEG. Or it's going to be a TIFF file. It's going to be a file.
Right.
The guy owns the file, it gets transcribed to the blockchain, and now he claims ownership, and it can be proven that the block, because the deal's done, you did sell the item. Yeah, you sure you can make a copy, but it's beside the point because the original is on the ledger.
Couldn't I have done that with a bill of sale somehow, digitized bill of sale on an original piece that's, you know, I'm talking about an actual painting.
Okay. let's go with that, what you just said. Seems logical.
Okay.
But you yourself, if you recall, at probably it's probably over a year ago, just the idea of blockchain was mentioned for some stock company. They're just dying. Some companies dying. We're going to change to being a blockchain company.
Yeah.
And the stock skyrocketed.
Right.
You made a point of mentioning this. And so blockchain's got some magic to it. So it's different.
I understand it. I understand the detail.
By the way, you could lose the bill of sale. You can't lose the document, the blockchain.
What I'm saying is digitize in a digital format, just like they did the ownership on the NFT.
Oh, you're saying to now digitize the bill of sale.
Correct.
And put that on the blockchain.
Correct.
I think a small company could be started that does that.
Yeah, for all sorts of things. How about titles? How about titles? Titles for your home.
Titles for your home would be a good thing to put on a blockchain. I agree.
These are generally digitized by the housing department of whatever particular county you're in. You know, you can always look that up and look at, you know, various documents.
You could blockchain it.
Yeah. And then so you blockchained it versus serverized it because of concern about a server going down. But now they have cloud. Is blockchain that important?
No, the blockchain, once the blockchain is established, it can go all over the place and it stays intact because of the nature of the way it's designed.
Yeah.
So you can't screw with it, supposedly. I'm stunned by the way that people haven't hacked this already.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, the decentralized nature of it, it's kind of like, you know, the original, what was the original Napster, where it was on multi, you know, you'd get from multiple people, you'd get parts of the music. Remember that?
No, that's BitTorrent. Napster was never that way.
Oh, Napster was just a file share.
No, Napster was point to point off of many servers.
Right.
The Napster software itself was just a kind of a clearinghouse, and everybody's server was in. It was more like the IRC's, some of the pirate systems that are in case within IRC. You can find somebody who have a server serving up a song you're looking for. You get that song, but then you can tap their server and say, what else you got? And you'll see their musical interests and all the songs that you can get.
I remember
get from
that.
Them.
Right. And you start going, I'll take
so
that.
So wasn't,
take that.
It wasn't divvied up the way BitTorrent does it, which is you have 25 people, each of them have a little chunk of this main file, and the torrent file or the torrent system puts them all together as long as they all have a piece of it.
But there was hashtags for that too. Isn't that very similar to the blockchain concept?
I don't think so. Now I can't say I can pretty much say that I don't think it is. I think blockchain is more of is like a stack of papers that are all digitized and the next step paper you can't go into the middle of it. You can't like pull out a thing out of the. I don't believe you can pull out a thing out of the middle of the blockchain and then pass it around as a singular unit.
Right.
It's different. These guys who dream these things up are very smart.
No, quite enough, of course. that makes a lot of sense. Well, we're talking about artwork. We're talking about the markets. And I thought we'd just talk about Masterworks for a second because we know that the Fed is having their Fed day tomorrow. And we know that they're committed to keeping interest rates very low for the foreseeable future. In fact, that bond yields, we know that are, you know, not on record lows, but historically in the lowest area that we've seen for a very long time. They're going to continue to stay from the Fed standpoint near 0%. And with the stock market trading at record highs, a lot of sophisticated investors are taking some chips off the table. And they ask the question, where do I put my hard-earned wealth now? So you look at a report from Citibank, Citi Private Bank, and Contemporary Art returned 13.6% per year over the last 25 years. And you can compare that to about 8.6% per year for the S&P 500. And art also had a lower loss rate than gold with almost no correlation to the stock market. Masterworks.io is the first and only platform that lets you invest in blue chip art from artists like Monet and Basquiat. Recently, Masterworks.io sold their first Banksy masterpiece for a 32% return net of fees to investors. You can learn more by heading over to masterworks.io and using the promo code DHU to skip the 15,000 person waitlist. Again, that's masterworks.io, promo code DHU. See important information at masterworks.io/disclaimer. So.
Nice. But backing up to the BitTorrent and blockchain analogies,
right,
or explanations, I will be getting some notes from some dudes named Ben who understand these better than I do, explaining how wrong I am.
Well, that would be good, so if you could bring that to the next show.
I'm just saying in advance.
Well, that's good. No, that'd be good. I'd like to know, not you know, just to break it down. Like, if the note starts out with, "You guys are morons," just toss it. Okay. Which I'm sure
you
that
will, idiot.
Right. Maybe just put that into your filter right now, into your email filter. So just to get rid of all those instead of trying to hand delete. But if somebody brings, you know, a good explanation of the differentials of it, that would be very helpful.
I would like to hear a better explanation of the simplistic. It has to be within, it has to be, you can't go on for days. It has to be like a few sentences. The difference between BitTorrent, the BitTorrent mechanism, and blockchain, not that they're the same, and I don't think they are, because BitTorrent's got a specific reason for existence, but there's something similar about it, now that I think about it, that makes me wonder if the blockchain idea came from BitTorrent.
Right, remember, there's something about BitTorrent. If you're getting all your little pieces of this MP3 file from all these different pieces around, remember, if one server went down, it would then search for another one with that piece. Remember that?
Yeah.
And then you'd have it. So that was a decentralized way of grabbing an MP3 file. It wasn't a peer-to-peer.
Well, that's BitTorrent. That's not Napster, though.
I get it. I understand.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. All right. Those phrases. You know, I have some pet peeves out there. You know, I have a few things that just, as you would say,
Things that are, let me think. Is it bare feet in the airport? Is there number one?
Yeah, it's up there.
People who wear Crocs.
Crocs, I like these days. I've become a Crocs fan. As a matter of fact, You should look at the stock chart on Crocs, and we hold that in our portfolio these days. It is off the charts. Think about what that is.
Really?
It's a sterile material used a lot of times by a lot of different people. I use it. Those are my fishing shoes. They're great because they get wet. Who cares?
Your tune has changed.
Oh, I like Crocs. I have three pairs of Crocs. Two I wear. One looks like a Docksider. Can't get them anymore. It looks just like a Docksider, but it's a Crocs. So you don't get that leathery nastiness.
Yeah.
And then the other one is just, it's kind of a gray with this bright green, and that's my fishing shoes.
Well, I'm reminded of my favorite shoe.
Oh?
Skechers.
Do you like Skechers?
Yes, I like Skechers a lot. And I'll tell you, there are two reasons. One, they're unbelievably cheap.
Yes.
And especially since we have an outlet store just up the road from me, Skechers Outlet, which makes them even cheaper. And then you can get a coupon to get them even cheaper. They're pretty much giving the shoes away. But they fit perfectly. And they have they usually have this comfort foam they've been using over the last few years. That is just, they're just extremely comfortable shoes to wear. And some of them are stylish, which you can find, not a lot of them, but enough of them. But it reminds me of what you just said about Crocs. You go to a Skechers store, you go a year later, none of the shoes are wild. I want to get another pair of these. Forget it. You'll never see another pair of them.
You know what I do? I buy like two or three.
Buy two pair.
At least. But I will share something with you. For years, I've been wearing New Balance. I find them very comfortable. For my running, exercising, is Brooks. I decided not too long ago, I would say 6 months ago, to let me check out these Skechers, because I have wide feet, so you get the wide ones.
And they have a wide foot section in Skechers.
So I grabbed the Skechers, and I've been wearing them for a few. Can I tell you something? These shoes stink. And when I say stink, they smell. I'm sitting at my desk one day. I'm like, what is that? What is that? What is that aroma? Maybe it's my carpet? Is it my carpet? I don't know. I let it go.
You may have a fungus problem. It really may have nothing to do with the Skechers.
I'm going to tell you a true story. I put on my New Balance, nothing at all. I put these bags of this organic chlorine stuff in the Skechers to try to get rid of the, or bleach stuff to get rid of the smell. They smell fine. This is a true story. Haven't worn the Skechers in months. On this weekend, I'm going fishing. I'm deciding, you know what? I'm going to wear sneakers today just to kind of make sure that, you know, my back is good. I have a lot of stuff going on. I want to have something with a lot of support. I put the Skechers on. 15 minutes later, I'm doing a few things, getting ready to go. I'm like, That smell again is there.
Maybe it's just a bad pair.
I don't know. It scared the hell out of me. I got another pair in there I could try on, but no good.
Could be the what they're made from, that particular batch of Skechers may have been made. You know, they have a look. It's a pretty interesting operation in terms of the variety of styles that they make.
Yeah, very comfortable shoes. Truly, truly. Go to Skechers.com. Keyword.
Just get them as a sponsor. Them and Crocs.
Yeah. But Crocs, actually, the chart is remarkable. A lot of the things that happened when all of these first-line workers had to, I guess, stay and work a lot and work a lot more, I guess, and people staying at home, they bought comfortable shoes. So I would, some of them are ugly, I'll give you that, but some of them are, they have nice designs. Anyway, phrases. We went a little bit off to the side of
back.
Yeah, we're back now. Number one, I'll just kind of bring you a phrase or a word that has always been a problem for me. We have a framework.
Yeah, framework.
Framework of agreement on something, right? You know, that's, what does that mean, right? We don't know what that means. That means that they're agreeing to do something. We don't know. All right. Some of the new phrases that you may have heard recently are starting to really rub me, because when they're said, it's like when you heard the word blockchain, or maybe for a while it was marijuana stocks, pot stocks. You know, these phrases just get everybody in a tizzy, and they get all excited. So we have NFTs now, and we have, of course, the SPACs. But there's a few things in there that are very, I think, dangerous. One, when a company starts talking about their path to profitability, have you heard this one?
Oh, yeah. You hear that all the time.
We have a path to profitability. It's crap. They know that.
It's like one of those crap Silicon Valley phrases from years ago. And you remember they had all these Silicon Valley bingo, all the stuff people would say, you know, click and mortar and all these different kinds of things.
Right. You know, you talk about that, you know, things like,
eyeballs.
Yeah, eyeballs. 80% of my sales have now coming from online. Meanwhile, sales drop 50%, but they're all excited because they have all this online stuff. Even though it's less, you know, it's more profitable, yes, they have less revenues. The second phrase that you're starting to see a lot more of is one-pagers. One-pagers are these investment thesis that happens when you put down all these different ideas and then you just kind of put down some gobbledygook of numbers with some extrapolations out of what you believe it's going to be, and it becomes the reason to invest. A quick one-pager. And it's not even a one-pager like, you know, of a story, a summary and all that. It's just, I would say it's more like maybe 3/4 of a page of information and a lot of spaces, a lot of short sentences. And
this is not just in the investment world. I have seen this one-pagers. I got a sheet I was reading about. I can't remember exactly what it was about, but it was a list of complaints or something that had to do with something I was researching. And they said, here's the one-pager version.
Yeah,
and the one-pager version was exactly the same length as the original document, which was only one page to begin with.
But a one-pager is like a thing. What was the other one?
Yeah, it's important that you have a one-pager. One-pager is supposed to be a synopsis or a rundown or something, because you're too busy. You're too busy to actually read anything. So you need the one-pager. Where's my one-pager?
Is this like the when they do the somebody says to you, hey, that sounds great. Send me your deck.
The old deck.
Yeah, send me your deck. That. You got a deck? Ugh. The other one that's really
before deck, it was foils.
Was it really?
Yeah, foils.
What did that mean?
The deck is like, isn't this like a PowerPoint or something?
It's a PowerPoint in PDF.
Yeah. Well, before PowerPoints, they had decks. I'm sorry, foils, which were a bunch of these glass scene things that you stuck under that crazy projector that up underneath the transparent thing and then up and bounced it up. Those were foils.
I had a math teacher that would use that instead of the blackboards or the chalkboards or the whiteboards. They would just use that and use, pens, black pens, and she would
write on the foils.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Yep. The other phrase that's really kind of the newer versions of weather and transitory, those kind of things, is this another phrase that you just kind of keep your ears perked up for. It's the TAM, the total addressable market.
Wow.
What they talk about is a new type of technology or a new service or a new company or a new product. And they say, yes, you know, we built this. We think it's going to be really kind of successful. We have sales in the neighborhood of, you know, $2 million. But the total addressable market that we calculate is like $200 billion. Making it seem like they're going to capture a chunk of that. And
well, this reminds me of the cable business. They have a total households.
Yeah.
A calculation. Say, oh, we have our show and it has our total households are, you know, 500,000 or whatever it is. It could be a million. But that means that your channel will appear at this various cable networks and hit the potential, the absolute max would be the 500,000. You can't get more than that, but that's your household number. So it's some bogus way of making something bigger than it is.
Do you remember when stations went on cable, it was supposed to be non-commercials because you were paying for the cable? You're paying for the right to have that service. And in the beginning, well, advertising was less.
It should have been. But my thinking when it first started, first of all, cable was never known as cable. It started off as CCTV, community closed circuit television. And it was a bunch of, you know, some guy set up in some fringe area, say, I don't know, 60 miles north of San Francisco. And they would have these big dishes and they'd collect the signals from the San Francisco stations and probably the Sacramento stations. And then they put them on a closed circuit community, a CCTV system. And that was cable. That's the way cable began. And it was a favor to the people that lived in the rural areas. And it was a way that the regular stations could get an extension of their signal. A natural extension, so they get a bigger audience, and they could charge more for ads if they wanted to.
I don't know. It's gone to hell. That's all I know. The whole cable thing. No. It's just you can't watch certain things. I mean, and the commercials are absurd. Just get more and more. I mean, an hour's worth of programming is like 35 minutes of show. It seems.
Oh, it's horrible. I can't. It's hard to watch.
Yeah. Let's segue over to the China area and the Ant Group. Do you remember they were going to do the Ant Group, which is a big financial conglomerate? That's,
yes, this was going to be a big deal.
And then they pulled the plug on it. Well, here's some of the things that
are
going on.
Wasn't Jack Ma one of the guys involved
Jack
in
Ma,
this?
Jack Ma, which you haven't seen a lot of him recently. Just
They haven't taken all the probes out of his brain yet.
Yeah, right. Haven't uncuffed him either out of the chair. China's Ant Group on Friday said that its consumer loan platforms will no longer issue loans to minors and will prevent small business loans from flowing into stock and property markets.
So oh, that's funny.
I mean, the minor part seems reasonable enough. I mean, some 8-year-old comes up to the window and says, hey, I need $5,000. And what do they do? Just say, okay.
Yes.
How did this work?
Need to buy a new tricycle.
I mean, and then I how are they going to stop the loans from going into investments? That just seems ridiculous.
You can't.
Yeah. Let's kind of bang through some of the rest of this. There was a trusted experiment that went bad in exercise. A former Panda Express employee said that she was persuaded and pressured to strip to her underwear in front of colleagues and strangers during a trust-building exercise. This is Panda Express. What kind of trust?
I know.
What a trust building. For
somebody scammed her.
Isn't this the person that's in the mall with the toothpicks that they shove the bourbon chicken into your face? Isn't that them?
Bourbon chicken. That's about right.
That's right, right?
Jennifer. And orange chicken. That's the other one.
Yeah, and they taste the same. Jennifer Spagfiore, 23, filed a lawsuit last month in Los Angeles County Supreme Court. Superior Court.
Have we seen a picture of her?
No. What is that going to mean?
I think it would be interesting. It's possible that she was just being scammed to strip for a bunch of horny old men.
Actually, if you read the whole story, which I did because I was kind of interested in what was going on, it seems that not only her, but a male was also stripped down, and they had to get close and hug each other, and everybody was just around
watching,
laughing the whole thing, you know?
Ugh.
Well, then again, you know, don't know if the guy.
I just advised anybody out there that gets stuck in one of these seminars. It's really all stemmed from the sensitivity training from the 60s that evolved through EST and all these other life springs and all these other operations that do these seminars. You can just say no. And if they press you anymore, so I'm calling the cops. See how far they go.
Do you remember in S, they always, when I talk to people who went to S, they're like, yeah, they made us sit for 8 hours. You couldn't go to the bathroom.
Yeah, yeah.
Was not allowed. I did Landmark. I did a whole year's worth of Landmark.
Oh, yeah?
That was kind of interesting.
These were all based on this, based pretty much on a number of things that were developed in the 60s, these ideas.
Yeah, it was Warner Earhart.
And Warner Earhart mastered it. He was the best.
Right. And the whole thing was really a multi-level marketing scheme in that one of the things they told you is in order to get the most out of this, you need to share this.
You have to come back.
You have to come back.
You got to share it. You got to come back. You got to pay money.
And you got to bring people. You have to. You are not complete unless you brought like five people close to you and they sat in on an orientation with you and heard from you. And the whole time you're like, I don't know, no, because I know you're going to pressure them. No. Yeah. We have a surprise tax hike in the stimulus bill. One takes away deductions for publicly traded companies that pay top employees more than $1 million. Another one cracks down on now and how multinational companies do their taxes. A third targets how owners of unincorporated businesses account for their losses. So they snuck a few tax hikes into this last stimulus
bill. Oh, cool.
Yeah, there's a bunch of them. And House Democrats are now looking at bringing back earmarks, which I asked the question, did they ever leave?
They didn't. This is nonsense.
I mean, how do you bring back, is there a difference between earmarks and sausage stuffing?
There has been, they've never left. They backed off on them. They didn't eliminate them under any circumstances. Then why would they?
I mean, now that they have control, and if they do bring back, or maybe not bring back, but publicly allow.
Boost.
Yeah.
Boost.
They boost the earmarks. If they do this, what happens now is if it becomes fashionable, no bill will be done without excess being put on top for special interests. Terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. Why wouldn't you do that?
Right. Let's see what else we got. Vaccine passports are coming in. The talk is growing louder. For a tool to open up vaccines, slippery slope. Obviously, if you want to hear more about this, listen to No Agenda on Thursdays and Sundays at 12 p.m. noon live. John C. Dvorak, Adam Curry. Well, they'll fill you up enough with all the hoo ha. They're Fauci haters. They're not
Fauci haters.
They're Fauci. You are somebody's a Fauci hater on that show.
It must be Adam.
Well. Anyway.
Nobody likes Fauci.
Right. So, I mean, he was nice in the beginning, but now he's just, you know.
No, he's never been. He's always been just a talking head. It does the job for some special interests.
Yep. Bounce back better. Bounce back better. Another triple B. You got to keep on doing the B's. Johnson wants British citizens to go on a diet. He said, I've been doing
a lot. He's kind of chubby himself, isn't he?
Yeah. And then he thinks that, you know, caused some of extra problems with COVID. He says, I've been doing a lot. In fact, everything I can to lose weight and to feel better and healthier. And what I've been doing, I've been eating less carbs, avoiding chocolate, no more late night cheese. Who eats cheese late night? Is that a thing?
Ugh. I've had cheese late at night.
You got to brush up again and all. I've been getting up early, go for runs, and the results that I actually have lost some weight. So trying to do that.
See him going on a run. That would be something.
Yeah. Especially, I'd like to see his hair moving around as he's doing that.
Flopping around. Yeah.
Airline stocks doing really well these days. We saw a major bailout from the stimulus, and travel is up. As a matter of fact, we saw the most check-ins over the last few weeks as people are getting pretty excited about the vaccines and all that. The Jets ETF, JETTS, which we talked about a few months ago, highest price since March 2020. Which,
nice.
Yeah. Well, when you get a $14 billion excess.
Yeah, free money.
Free money. And $1 billion for contractors to the air carriers to extend payroll support, and $8 billion for airports to make changes to facilitate prevention of the spread of COVID-19.
Why does it take $8 billion to do that?
Oh, it's very expensive. It's very expensive. Everything's in, it can't be less than a billions. Has to be in the billions. And aren't airports funded by a combination of taxes, combination of airline parking fees, if you will, and other private enterprises?
Yeah. Parking fees that you pay a tax at various airports, it's on your ticket. Yeah, it's all paid for.
So why are we...
What's the $8 billion for? It's for some guys putting their wallets.
Yeah, it's probably just air conditioning or something like that. Some filters, a lot of HEPA filters putting around. Probably, you know,
they already have HEPA filters all over the place, including in the airlines, in the airplanes.
It's going to be feel-good signs that they're going to make, like, out of tile or something in the walls and announcements overhead. This airport is COVID-19 certified. Nothing ever really dies. Toys R Us is coming back, and Babies R Us starting to open stores again.
Huh, well, good for them.
When's the last time we saw something actually really go under and stay under? First of all, JCPenney and Sears just cannot take the dive. Just can't wave the white flag and say, okay,
Henry's Hamburgers.
Where was that?
They were everywhere. Henry's Hamburgers was the exact clone of McDonald's. And when McDonald's opened up, a Henry's opened up nearby because they figured McDonald's already did the research on the area that you want to put up a facility. So they would open up. They were a 15-cent hamburger place just like McDonald's. They had basically the same menu, only the colors were green and white, I think, instead of yellow and whatever, and blue, red. And, Henry's Hamburgers, they never made a comeback. I think there's maybe the one original store is still open, but it's not really even owned by them, I don't think.
That must have been West Coast, because East Coast, the same exact thing that you just described, exactly, aside from the colors, which were orange and something, was Wetson's. Have you heard of Wetson's?
No, never heard of them.
It was always, there was a McDonald's over there and a Wetson's over there. And my dad liked Wetson's.
What? I'm sure. You know, I had Henry's Hamburgers. There was one in San Jose right next to one of the McDonald's. And I've had their burgers in the old days when I was in high school, I think. And they tasted almost identical. I didn't see why one would be any better than the other. I can't believe Wetson's was a better burger.
Right. I'm still of the belief that the Burger King, I told you this, the smoke coming out of the top of the Burger King is somehow manufactured to smell the neighborhood up so you get all excited about going there. I've told you this, right?
Oh, because for that nice woodsy smoke.
Yeah, yeah. You could be there when they're not even open yet. There's no cars or they're closing down for the night. There's still this plume of smoke coming up.
They don't have that around here.
Oh, no?
No, I think the Air Pollution District put the kibosh on that. So I've never seen a smoking Burger King.
Oh. Well, we have some news out of Apple. Multiple reports suggest that Apple is developing an augmented reality headset as well as smart glasses. Now, I don't know about you, John. I feel like I've heard the story before.
Yeah, this is just kind of relates to what we're just talking about. These companies that never go out of business, these ideas that never go away.
Wasn't the first failure the Google Glass?
Yeah.
Wasn't the second failure the Snapchat glass?
Yeah.
And now we have the reimagination of this through Apple. I'm still waiting for the contact lens. That's what I want.
That's what everybody wants.
Yeah, this really cool contact lens that calculates things and tells me where to turn and all that. But the Apple has a new patent that may provide a clue if you want to look it up. They're doing something called jitter-free and gaze-driven video. It's patent number 10951-04-B2. I guess either issued or patent submitted on March 16th, which is today. Which is today. Now, last time you asked me to look up something related to the old Codgers portfolio.
Yes.
Before we do that, I want to mention that if you love the show, if you have anything that you want to reward us with for making your evening so enjoyable, or maybe you got some ideas on how to invest, maybe you got some education, well, you can go over to DH Unplugged and donate to the show. Whatever you want to give is great. The more, the better, of course. And you can go and easily do so on a weekly basis, a one-time basis. Click on the little yellow button. Little yellow button says, well, donate. and check it out. Everybody in the chat room, go over, do that right now. No free lunch. But what I was we were talking about was the old cadre, so I have the numbers up. Now, just to give you some background on this, this was created on May 6th, 2016. So almost 5 years ago. The total return on the old Codgers index portfolio, which had things like, I don't know, it had like Ford and Clorox. It had.
Yeah, they had the stuff old Codgers would buy.
Right. Okay. And then the Global X Millennials Thematic ETF, symbol MILN, was challenging it to see, you know, that whole the Facebooks in it and all the, you know, Snapchats and all the millennial stuff in it. Well, not to be surprised by this, but since inception, the old Codgers index non-annualized total return only is up a whopping 25%. The Global X Millennials Thematic ETF is up 177%.
Hmm. Well, there you have it.
Are we giving up yet, or just nothing ever dies and just continue on? That there's still,
I think
still
should
a chance.
Continue.
Still a chance. Still got a chance.
Well, here's what I do suggest. Because of the new Build Back Better, the Biden, the whole thing, we should reset these two funds.
Okay. Let me write this down here.
Zero them out.
Oh, start all over again.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
And are we going to update the old codgers?
No.
Okay, so we're going to do, let me see this now. The
No, you should keep the old companies.
Codgers. They'll reset as of what date? You want to do it on Biden's inauguration date? What do you want to do?
Yeah, January. Let's do it from January 20th.
January 20th, 2021. Will do. We got it in. Okay. I got an email from the second runner-up today for the T-shirt for last week's Halliburton that he got credit for. I don't know if you saw about this hack attack. I thought it was really interesting. A group of hackers say they breached a massive trove of security cameras that were collecting data by Silicon Valley startup Verkada.
Yeah.
And they got access to 150,000 surveillance cameras inside hospitals and companies, police departments, prisons, and schools. How does that happen?
Well, they found that there's some. It seems as if Verkada was funneling all these video feeds into some system where they stored them. It was in the cloud or something like that. And these guys were man in the middle, and I just hacked into something that they could go look at any one of them, I guess. I mean, it's the only thing that makes sense.
Yeah. This is why I don't keep a camera in my office, by the way. I have it in the studio.
Well, you shouldn't. Why would you want to keep a camera in your office?
You have Zoom meetings and people are like, oh, do you have a camera? I'm like, no, actually, frankly, because privacy and compliance. You know, I have, you may be able to, if I have a camera on my screen, I have multiple screens around me. Who knows what they can look at?
You can't do that.
Yeah.
It's a violation of everybody's expectations.
Mm-hmm. We have one more story about Lizzie before we get to the limericks. We have three limericks all told tonight. Two from JCD. Lizzie, former Theranos, remember her? CEO Elizabeth Holmes, who
nobody can forget her.
Yeah, whose criminal fraud trial was scheduled to start in July. Criminal fraud, what everybody thinks basically she's guilty from everything that we could see on this, somehow got pregnant. And
she's amazing.
And asking for a delay.
Yes, I'm pregnant. I've gotten pregnant. Both
parties agree that in light of the development, it's not feasible to begin the trial on July 13th. So this woman who possibly, you know, what kind of a mother who has a, let's even call it 50-50 chance of going to jail, or a woman would get pregnant with the prospect of going to jail ahead of her?
It's you know what it was. I mean, she gets some court sympathy, and maybe if they put it off long enough, she'll actually have the baby, so she can have the baby with her in the court, because the baby's brand, you know, as a little baby needs to be with the mom. I mean, it's just she's just playing her game, whatever it is. It's really pretty elaborate.
She's not a nice person. That's all I'm saying.
She is. She's just a character, that's for sure.
Yep. We got limericks. First one is from a Twitter feed that came in. Sent me about four of them, but it's from IT Engineered. I guess that's the way that's spelled. And his limerick goes something like this.
Engineered?
Oh, engineered. Oh, so like an engineer, but a nerd, a tech nerd guy. It goes like this. The money supply is expanding. Its stimulus Congress is demanding. Jay Powell makes it burr. The Fed will confer. Can't possibly end in a crash landing.
Well, I thought that the rhythm was good. I'm not so sure that I don't get the end of his. I don't get his last. The last line is always the tough one.
I think it's sarcastic.
Oh, if it's sarcastic, yeah, then you have to read it slightly different.
Can't possibly end in a crash landing? You should have put a question mark at the end.
Well, I don't know. It's good. I'll give him a B.
All right, and chat room and all the gang out there, we're going to read some from John C. Dvorak. We have two of them submitted today. The first one is, there once was a woman named Janet whose head was as big as a planet. To the Treasury she flew from the Fed that she knew. If there's a collapse, you can say she began it. Wow. See, I could read that because it's flow. I could read it with a little bit of inflection and a little bit of nuance, right? Because that works. That's how you do it. John C.
Well, you want to know the secret?
What's this? You cheated? You bought them?
No. I should be selling them. You read it yourself. You just sit there and you read it and you read it and you read it and you say, this line needs to be longer. And you finally get the so it flows. It's just a matter of reading it over and over.
Well, I give you an A. You got an average in, let's see, A minus, A++, A. That's what I'm reading up there. All right, next one. Let's see if we can go two for two. Doing Fred limericks like this is sketchy. Talking about it is extremely kvetchy. We could continue for now, as wasted time will allow, even though very few are that catchy. Yeah, the catchy thing. I see it now. Yep. I don't think the catchy, the sketchy, the kvetchy. Sketchy, kvetchy, catchy.
Kvetchy and sketchy, they do rhyme.
They're close. You're getting panned. Yeah.
This is what happens when you go bite the hand that feeds you.
Yeah, this was a good one. The first one was fantastic. One of the best ever. All right, that one's going to be that one's a B, 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 C, B, C, A. So that's a B minus. That's a B minus. This is a game that we play. It's not a solicitation to buy or sell any security. It's not a recommendation of any kind. Nothing on the show should be considered investment advice or a recommendation. If you choose to invest in any of the stocks mentioned, you should know that it may carry risk, along with the risk of a loss of principal. You should also seek out professional financial advice for your particular situation. We assume no risk, as these are not to be considered recommendations. Horowitz Company, myself, or John C. Dvorak may invest in any of the securities mentioned, and we'll disclose that on the website under the weekly stock picks section. You can go to dhunplugged.com and see all the names we discuss in the segment, along with the performance information from the date discussed, as well as any additional important disclosures. All right, we're running out of a little time here, so we can just say that there's a lot of green. Andrew takes the lead again.
Yeah, you took the lead again. This was galling.
Yeah, train tech just keeps on moving. Not a train tech, not a train wreck. Let's just say that. Keeps on kind of moving up.
That's the best pick, and it's there. You've close to double.
Look at the global Jets. In there. The Jets was down 2.5% today, still up 53% since September. Your Summit Financial up 64%. Gold stinks. Honeywell up 20%. That was in November. UPS, not so good. NXP Semiconductors, a hot sector right now. Your pick since the beginning of this, December, up 27%. PetMed Express down about 7%. SSG, your pick from last couple weeks ago, is kicked down 4.9%. Kellogg up 1.7%. Workhorse Group, we dual pick, was up a little bit until today. We lost 6% on today, but it's flat. GameStop. You. The good news was, this thing you got in right at the right time. It flew up again, but before it did, it dropped dramatically out of nowhere. You made 23% because of the stop. Right now, you would have been a little bit worse off, but it did kind of move. So 23% up on the GameStop short, which was a go again. And News Corp which was insiders of 5.7. I will short circuit real quickly and tell you, ahead of a Fed meeting and with what's going on with markets right now, with the volatility we have, there's no way I'm going to reasonably pick something.
I am.
Okay, what do you got?
GameStop.
Oh, boy.
Short. Hey, I might as well make it a running gag.
Let's just put this, let's just copy this whole thing over here, I guess. Copy the whole line. There we go. Controls. And it's go again two.
Go again two.
Go again two. Okay. We're going to end it there. Anything else that you want to
Okay, sounds good.
Say?
Good
anything show. Else you want to give? Anything else? Anything?
I think we're good to go.
All right. I'll see you again next week.
All right. Bye.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, because I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pockets, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a man. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.
Advertisements are not related to the host or affiliates and are not considered recommendations by the host of the show or any affiliates of Horowitz and Company.